listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Ed McGrogan and Steve Tigner here with you at historic Tennis.com headquarters, where today we partake in a tradition unlike any other, the injuries. And thank you to YouTube for that wonderful clip of the Masters. And thinking about that time now, we're at 5 degrees, give or take a few degrees. And more to the point, the injuries. Steve, this is a pretty, I don't even want to say it's actually a particularly bad year, because I have some just general sort of thoughts and issues and really just kind of disgust at the embarrassment of all of this that it just gives the sport. Because I think to me, we see these, we just see this every year, and it doesn't really change based on the short off seasons and players also being cautious, I think overly cautious, to make sure they don't injure themselves or take themselves out of the Australian Open, which doesn't start too far away. But, you know, overall, what did this news of, I mean, you can run down the names for us, of all the various withdrawals and retirements and ailments. It's just not a pretty first week for tennis.
Yeah, well, we started out thinking it was going to be a big week because so many players are there, and then, you know, they start to drop like flies. First, you have Serena, who really wasn't playing a real tournament, but is in an exhibition. But I guess that's, you know, she has a knee problem and had to retire from a match, and that's a knee issue that goes way back, and is always, you know, sort of cropping back up. It did last year as well. So that's sort of news for the, you know, for the future. Is she going to be okay for the Australian Open? She's been injured at the Australian Open a few times recently. She lost to Sloane Stephens when she had an ankle problem. She lost to Ivanovic when she had a back problem. And, you know, now there's this. So that's something to look for.
Yeah, and, you know, last year with Serena, we did, you know, see her overcome, you know, not being in 100% a few times. And I think a lot of us, you know, obviously look ahead to kind of see where the, you know, what kind of follow-up she gives to last year. And a lot of it is, I think, based on motivation, and a lot of it is based on just, you know, can she keep up her abilities? But you wonder perhaps if maybe the injury toll that she really has had to manage and has never really escaped, even during her, you know, these really recent dominant years, I think makes them even more impressive. She's always really had to deal with these sort of nagging problems.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes she makes it through, but in Australia, you know, I think she's struggled maybe a little more than in the past. You don't know whether she comes in not quite ready after the off season, or whether there's trained too much. You know, it's hard to say what that is, but it is a tricky time for her. But now we also have, as you said, Simona Halep and Maria Sharapova both pulled out of Brisbane without playing a point. Halep has an Achilles problem. Maria has a forearm problem. Both of those seem to be chronic, and they both seem a little, you know, ominous for the Australian Open. I think each of them is being cautious by pulling out, but those are ones that have come back before. Halep says she had trouble running at all. She has had an Achilles problem for a while.
Yeah, and we actually avoided seeing a Halep Azarenka match because of that that withdrawal from Halep there. You know, it was a nice point you made that the beat goes on for Vika in terms of getting these difficult draws, but she will manage to elude Halep at least for now as it goes toward Australia.
Yeah, but that, you know, it didn't sound that great for Halep. We'll see how serious it is. But she said she was struggling to run. Maybe she's just being cautious again. But you know, the Australian Open's coming up fast. We also had Venus Williams comes in this week with, seem, you know, we had high hopes for her this year. It seemed like a big year. She was up to number 7. Now suddenly she's down to number 10. She lost in the first round in Auckland. Kvitova had to retire from her first round. She was second seed in China, and Ivanovic, also second seed, lost in the first round. So you sort of have this, you know, it is pretty typical, like you say, before a Grand Slam to have a lot of these withdrawals or early losses or people sort of, you know, looking ahead, I guess. And now it is unfortunate for the tour. The first day of the season, you think it's going to be a great first week. The second day, you know, nobody's playing again. So
yeah, this is actually you know, I know I was didn't hold back on my thoughts of where I think this is, you know, in terms of an optics perspective. I think this is yet kind of another example of tennis really not getting out of its own way, using really deferring to common sense and a couple things with the schedule. But one thing that you mentioned there about the first day is that I think this is actually a point that this is something that tennis can't or doesn't take advantage of very well, is that other sports, I think you have that opening day and it's a very big event. It's well known when it is. I think everybody is, you know, you come in with that clean slate. Really, it's sort of possibilities are endless for until the first whistle or first face-off or first pitch is thrown. And maybe that's just something that deals with team sports and you can't replicate it in an individual sport. But I do feel that tennis, you know, suffers from that, especially, you know, right now when, you know, it's tough going against, you know, obviously the other major sports, but I don't think the sport does itself any favors when you are, you know, when you're really unable to capitalize on what should be, you know, what should be a sort of a benchmark time for really any sport. And, you know, that's the nature of things. You know, there's not one place where players are congregating. There's six tournaments. You know, the time zone's clearly different. I understand all that. But it is one other thing that I think challenges tennis, you know, which always gets better as the year goes on in terms of prestige and exposure. But, you know, this is it just – the beginning of the year always tends to leave a little bit of a sour taste, but the Aussie Open does, you know, kind of wipe away those early wounds too.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing to look for. Is everybody going to be okay for the Australian Open? If you have Serena, Maria, and Simona, if it's, you know, continues with them, then that's bad news. Otherwise, you're right. By the time they start in Melbourne, this will be forgotten.
It's true, yeah. And, you know, when we think about the Australian Open, I do, you know, that has not traditionally disappointed either over the past really 10 years since the tournament has, you know, become such a bigger event, really. I mean, I wonder if, you know, it's not like the previous generation of players wasn't affected by it, but the Australian Open overall has, I think, become in many ways just a better tournament over such a, you know, over a long period of time. And I think it's a, you know, it's become such a significant event, of course, for a reason. I mean, and I think that's, you know, a big part of this, of what's going on here. And, you know, like you said, though, we, you know, or like both of us kind of allude to, it is a big schedule this week, across Asia, across Australia. You know, we've obviously talked about the attrition on the women's side, some of the players that are already not playing this week. But, you know, for the men, you're seeing pretty much everybody as well. Djokovic, Nadal, Federer. At the moment, they are not injured, but you know, we are seeing, I will say, a lot of players entered in tournaments, and you know, we're getting our first looks at these guys, some of whom in the past have actually not started their year until the Australian Open. They kind of wanted to get it going a little quicker this time.
Yeah, you know, I every year it seems like there's more people in action over the first week. It's pretty much on both sides, pretty much the entire top 10, which definitely didn't used to be the case. Now you have Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, Wawrinka, you know, they're all playing tournaments. Djokovic has already started things smoothly, won his first round. He looks good
again. This tournament is one he hasn't won, or he didn't win last year, so I guess there's some little bit of motivation, extra motivation there if he needs it. I guess Federer, of course, will be an interesting case. He won Brisbane last year and then didn't do so well at the Australian Open. Now he comes in, we'll see him with his new coach, Ljubicic. He's in the same draw with Kei Nishikori. So, you know, there's another person who's we're looking forward to seeing what he does this year. Of course, there's also Nadal. He's started in Doha as well, and we'll see if he can do anything starting out. He started last year, he lost in the first round, and that was, looking back, that was an ominous sign for him throughout the year. So as the year went, it was sort of he lost, you know, to somebody not in the top 50 last year. So see if he can get off to a better start.
Yeah, and you mentioned Djokovic. Yesterday beats Dustin Brown about 51 minutes. It really just you wouldn't have even known it's a different season for Djokovic with that kind of start. And as you say, looking back on the prior year, you know, I think that was interesting to note that, you know, what Nadal did at the start of last year really was, you know, in retrospect, really a portent of what was to come for him. Of course, Djokovic, he lost his opening match and lost about five others for the rest of the year. So, you know, the opening week, I think overall, one of those where I think everybody's still trying to get their feet wet for a little bit. And really, of course, gearing up, you know, toward the Aussie. Was there anything you saw, you know, in that Djokovic match in particular that, you know, I can't imagine there's really anything new to add, but you know, it did, I have to say, for coming out of the gates against a guy who just recently beat Rafa at Wimbledon has been known to give players trouble, to just crush him in 44 in 51 minutes, you know, just, you know, another feather in his cap there.
Yeah, no trouble. I don't know, you know, it's hard to say what more Djokovic can do. He's working with a new trainer, at least part time. Everything looked pretty much in order. I don't know when we're going to see another, you know, a problem for him. It's going to happen at some point. He's going to lose a match or at least get frustrated. You know, it seems like you hardly see that these days. So, no, there was, you know, nothing different to report as far as he goes. I think he's like he's pretty much the safest guy among the top guys these days.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to actually mention since we've talked a lot about tournaments here already, one thing that we didn't get to in the last podcast, even though I think this news could have come out a little bit after that, was there was a report through the wire talking about the Miami Open. For a long time, I think most people gave that the fifth slam mantle. I think that's certainly been given away, you know, kind of took Route 66 and went over to Indian Wells, California, a lot of people would say now. But some of the proclamations, you know, these reports came from an attorney that was looking at the event and really the issues that it's had for the past couple years in trying to allow the tournament to make renovations, make possibly, you know, much needed renovations to really keep this event, you know, going, keep up with the Joneses, the other Masters events that have continued to really become mini slams in their own ways. And, you know, we've heard for a while that, you know, if things, you know, were not, you know, weren't changed to the tournament's favor, that the event could move, and that was really the crux of what this piece was about, that it was only a matter of time before, or it is only a matter of time before, the Miami Open could relocate. You know, that can go a number of different directions, but, you know, I ask you about this because, you know, I'm kind of curious because you actually be going there a little bit this year, and I certainly want to hear kind of what the scene is down there at that time in late March. But, you know, I think, you know, one thing to say about this is that it's really continued this, you know, whatever local issues are in effect, it's continuing this kind of tournaments really going away from the U.S. You know, it would be certainly a blow to lose an event like this with, you know, a lot of history and clearly a great fields that go to it.
Yeah, I guess the question is whether they'd be allowed to expand in Crandon Park. They won in a referendum, but, you know, but there are special rules as far as who donated that park and what say they have in it, and they, people who are part of that family, don't want the park changed at all, and whether they can sort of override their wishes, and so far they haven't been able to, and if they can't, you know, the tournament feels that unless they can expand, they can't really compete with Indian Wells, which has sort of an endless amount of land and money to move into. I think the main thing with the facility at Crandon Park is that it's old and hasn't been redone, hasn't been updated for a long time. It really, you know, it does pale in comparison to Indian Wells at this point. I mean,
When's the last time you've been down to Miami, actually? Because you've been to Indian Wells for many of the past few years.
Yeah, last time I was there was in like 2009.
Yeah. Did it ever give off that vibe at that point, or has this been more of a recent?
It still seemed like I think at that point it was still kind of the premier event. I think Indian Wells was struggling. There was a lot of talk at that point of moving Indian Wells leaving the country before Larry Ellison got involved. So that things have flipped in that way. Miami, they've talked about moving it. Maybe, you know, there's been some talking about moving it to Orlando, where the USTA has a huge new facility. They could, you know, it could go to places like Shanghai or the Middle East. But Miami really does have a special sort of atmosphere, especially when you compare it to Indian Wells, which is Southern California, Palm Springs, an older audience. Miami has a sort of Latin feel, more energy there in Miami. You know, it's closer to a city, much closer to a big city, and it has that feel. It's a sort of a unique tennis atmosphere, I think, in it would definitely be missed, especially if it went to Orlando or anywhere else. You know, whatever they can do to try to keep it there, and whether they can somehow update it without having to expand, and whether that's enough, I guess that's the question.
It sounds very similar to what really Roland Garros has been dealing with too. That's a story that, for many years, or for the past couple of years, there's been threats of moving that around to different areas of Paris, or you know, even probably sacrilegiously going to, you know, outside of France altogether. And it seems like a very similar situation, actually.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's in a, you know, it's both were built at a different time in big city parks near big cities. I guess Indian Wells has the advantage of it's just in the desert. It's its own place. It's its own location. So we'll see what happens there, but moving it out of Miami would really be something lost there, because it was the first big Masters event, you know, 30 years ago. It sort of pioneered that concept of the second level tennis tournament.
You know, you've probably heard of it over many different names: the Lipton, the NASDAQ 100. You kind of can go on the Sony Open. But they've all been there, and like I said, it would be a pretty big change in the calendar for sure, depending on what happens there. So we'll keep an eye on that, see if anything else develops. We'll probably hear much more about it as the as the tours, you know, creep toward March and those events there. But you know, we will keep an eye on what remains for this week on tour, of course, when we get back. We'll be doing the podcast each Tuesday. We'll be recording them. We'll get them up as soon as humanly possible. And so you can look forward to that tradition this year as well. Lots on the site for 2015, you know, going into 2016. Please check that out, as always. So for Steve Tigner, this is Ed McGrogan. Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.